You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
The program is podcast, not by me obviously, but by more talented people. And talking about talented people, we have Joe M with us because Daryl is indisposed. And Joe, on his way overseas, cancelled his aircraft the panel operator. Thank you, Joe.
This is what we do when you're a volunteer at 3CR Community Radio.
Exactly.
You go beyond the call of duty.
Well, there is no call of duty. Well, Joe, look, I must thank you from the bottom of my heart allowing this little chat to occur. Now, today we're talking to people from the West Papuan office. We will learn a little bit about them. We'll learn about why they're involved. And if we miss anything, Louise Byrne is in the studio without a microphone.
In the gallery.
She's here to discipline the two people we're going to chat to.
Excellent.
And you, but not me.
No.
Now, gentlemen, Gibson Sue, hello.
Hey.
Hello, Gibson.
Quite nervous. First time coming here.
Have you never been on radio before?
No, it's not.
It's harmless. It's a bit, can you swim?
Yeah, I can.
Well, it's like swimming. You'll be fine.
Right.
And I'm sure Christopher Lynch has been on radio before.
Yes, a couple of times, yes.
A couple of times, so you're an old hand at it. An Olympic athlete. Look, this is very simple because let's get rid of all the garbage first. The main reason we're doing this is people kind of forgotten that the West Papuan office exists because it's so successful. Mm. It's been open for over 10 and a half years, almost 11 years, and there's a gathering on Sunday the 31st of August, 1 p.m. for lunch, and then there will be a book launch called The Stowaway. It's a story about Eddie Kora, K-O-R-W-A, and the author is Andy Van Binsbergen. So it sounds fascinating. From Sarong to Rotterdam, the stowaway. He looks quite healthy chap, doesn't he?
Yeah. Exactly.
So if you want to see what he looks like, you'll have to turn up on the 31st of August, Sunday. You'll find the office. It's 838 Collins Street, and it's an exceptionally important part of the West Papuan independence struggle. Now, Chris, as you're the elder here, I'll start off with you. What year were you born?
I was born in 1977.
Where?
In Papua New Guinea.
Papua New Guinea. Mm. Right. Wow. And when did you arrive in the land of the unbrave and the unfree?
1989.
Mm. So why did you come? I assume your parents came. They brought you along, did they?
Yeah, I was about to enter high school and they decided to come to Australia for me to do that.
So you could do a real... They didn't board you. They just came with you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got the offer. I got offered, did I want to go to boarding school in Mount Isa? And I said no.
Good choice. I've lived in Mount Isa. That's the best decision you've made in your life, Chris.
So, yeah, I'm the eldest of six and when we all moved down here.
Right.
No, to Brisbane.
Mm. What was life like in Brisbane in those days?
I didn't like it. I really missed home.
Papua New Guinea?
Yeah.
So what part of Papua New Guinea were you a kid?
Madang. I went to school in Madang and Port Moresby.
Yep.
And I have a connection to a village in Goroka in the Eastern Highlands now.
Mm. What do you mean a connection? How did that come about?
I was adopted into a family there, so every few years I've gone back. And quite a long story, but basically I got culturally adopted into a family there.
So, all right, you've got me interested.
Uh-huh.
How does somebody become culturally adopted? I've known people who've been culturally adopted into Aboriginal groups in Australia.
Yeah.
Is it a similar process in Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not too familiar with what happens in Australia, but Max is about my age, but he's my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when I met them years and years ago, the village Mangino is in a protected, wildlife protection area.
Wow.
And when I went there, the place that they had for ecotourism was closed, and but I wanted to go to this area, and they said, well, there's this tiny little village, very boring, you probably wouldn't want to go there.
I
said, no, I'd love to go.
You're an ecotourist. Obviously, you want the boring little village.
And I was the first ecotourist to show up to this village. And it was during election time, and so they were expecting a candidate to arrive. He promised that he was going to arrive.
Uh-huh.
And so everyone was dressed up in their bilas and all the finery to welcome this politician candidate.
All right.
And he didn't show, but
right.
I did.
All right.
so everyone performed for me instead. And I just got on like a house on fire with Max and kept going back and was eventually my ex-wife and I went back there and we were married into the... into the clan.
Right. Wow. Is that what broke up the marriage, was it?
No, no.
Okay. I could imagine your poor ex-wife. Oh, we're getting married in this little echo village in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. True love. True love.
Yeah.
All right. Look, we'll give you a rest after that beating, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Now, our second guest is a much younger person. Gibson, G-I-P-S-O-N, Sue, S-U-U?
That's it.
Two U's?
Yeah.
How come you get two U's in your name? What, you know, you're some type of chief.
I don't know. That's that's how, you know, basically we're coming from Highlands.
You come from the Highlands.
Yeah, coming from Highlands, you know. It's, that's our, it's like my clan, like, you know, Sue people.
Sue people. So you don't have a surname, but that's your clan name.
Yeah, that's my clan name. Like
S-U-U. If I insulted you, would other clan members give me a hard time?
Exactly.
I was just checking. I'm just checking. I want to be careful here, Chris. You never know. But your adopted family would do the same, would they? They give me a hard time.
People look after you in New Guinea.
Exactly.
And West Papua.
West Papua.
So, what year were you born, Gibson?
I was born in 2003.
Excuse me, child. What year were you born? 2003.
Yeah, 2003.
So what, you're not even 22?
I'm 22 now.
22?
Yeah, I'm 22 now, yeah.
All right, okay. Did you have a good 22nd birthday party?
Yeah, I'll say yes, but how we celebrate our birthday is completely different with Australia, you know. With,
right, we get drunk and blow candles.
Exactly.
What do you do?
We usually do what we call in our language, barapen.
Uh-huh, barapen.
So we will, you know, kill some pig and do like a stone burn, like that, you know.
You did this in Melbourne?
Nah, we... it's like... I think we are not allowed to do that.
So when did you come to Melbourne?
Oh, I came here for study.
When?
Oh, in 2023, yeah.
Yeah, well, but how did you celebrate your 22nd birthday in Melbourne? You said you didn't kill a pig. You haven't got the hot stones. You got drunk and blew out candles like the rest of us.
No, just pray and that's enough.
Pray.
Yeah, pray and that's enough.
That's good. So religion's important in your life.
Exactly.
So what did you come to study?
I came here to study in TAFE. So
TAFE, yes.
Yeah, in Queensland. And then
You came to study at TAFE in Queensland.
Yeah.
I was born in Queensland. That's not a good thing. And Chris, I understand that his education in Queensland. How did that go?
Pretty well. Like, you know, everything's going well. Like, you know, I did my certificate 3 and my diploma and I completed them.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of my study, I cannot go back to my hometown, back to West Papua because of the situation. Like, because of the situation.
Do you want to explain the situation? Or you don't have to, but if you wish, you can.
Oh, yeah. So I called my mom and I say, I want to come back to Yahukimo again. And at that time, you know, there was like a war happening.
That's right.
Between, you know, our West Papua Freedom Fighters and Indonesian Army, and where I come from is Yahukimo in Highland place. Like most of Indonesians people, they know is Yahukimo is like red zone or red
area. A red zone, right? Yeah, so that's a no go zone for the Indonesian Army.
So at that time, when my mom say, don't come here. Your brother just got killed, and then
your brother was killed.
Yeah, my cousins.
Your cousins.
Yeah,
and how old were they?
He was like a 24.
Yeah. Was he one of the freedom fighters or was he just killed?
He was just a civilian.
Just a civilian.
Yeah, he just, you know, just like helping my mom still carrying stuff.
When
they came to the, you know, when they did peace protests against the special autonomy.
Yes.
And then Indonesian military came down, like, shot him using machine gun.
I think people, when we protest in Australia, we get a little bit upset if they pepper spray us. in West Papua, they shoot into the crowd.
They shoot you.
Yeah.
Especially when they see you, like you have like a really big curly hair.
Yes, yes.
And then you have like a, what is it called, bracelet or, you know.
Traditional bracelets, yeah.
Yeah, like about free West Papua stuff, like,
bang.
They will mark you and boom.
Yeah. I don't think people realize that 60 years after the Indonesians incorporated West Papua into Indonesia, there is still an active guerrilla resistance in the mountains.
Yeah.
And nobody supports West Papua, do they? We don't see the Russians or the Chinese or the Afghanistans or the Australians especially.
Nobody
supports West Papua independence.
Even Australia's a really close one. So yes. Australian government.
You don't exist.
All right, okay.
You're 70 kilometres away, but 500,000 people haven't been killed there in the last 60 years. I know that.
Yeah.
That's what my government tells me, and I believe everything I'm told. Isn't that right, Joe? And you're the same, aren't you? You believe everything you're told?
West Papua, Merdeka.
Merdeka, I can't believe I've got a bloody Indonesian spy with us. Right. So why come to Melbourne from Brisbane? Isn't Brisbane the centre of the universe?
Brisbane's a small island. Sorry.
It's a what?
Brisbane's pretty small, like, you know. Not
small?
Pretty, yeah.
2 million people.
The place you can go is just Gold Coast, and that's it. Just not same as like Melbourne. Melbourne's like, you know, really... I'd say Melbourne is big, so...
Oh,
like,
I say it's big,
you know,
too.
Yeah. The access is, like, you know, everywhere.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. So is there a bigger West Papuan exile community in Melbourne than Brisbane, or...?
Not many. Yeah, even West Papuan stay there, but, like, you know, we don't know each other. Like, you know, you are from Solomon or you are from PNG or whatever. But, you know, there's no community in...
There's no community in Brisbane.
Yeah,
And what? When did you come to Melbourne?
In 2024, just last year.
Last year.
On August. Yeah, right. Once I completed my diploma and I...
So you've made application for permanent residence, I assume?
Yep, exactly.
And you're waiting for the result?
Exactly, yep.
Right. Have you left any brothers and sisters back in West Papua?
Yeah, so I got... I have big family, so I'm the fourth one.
Fourth one,
yeah. Yeah, I have two big sisters and one of my big brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then... My youngest brother and my younger sister.
Right. And is your dad still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive, and my mum as well.
Well, that's excellent. That's good. Yeah, all right. I'd better get back to Chris. He's getting a little bit forlorn there. He's looking a bit forlorn. You know, he's got relevance deprivation syndrome, what we call RDS.
Exactly.
He doesn't think, he thinks that, you know, he should be the kingpin because he works in the office. So.
Not at all.
You know, he's very modest and humble. That's the type of people that make me sick. You know, they do all the work. They organise everything. They give the movement all their time. Nobody appreciates them. And they're totally humble, unlike me. All right? Now, Chris, when did you come to Melbourne?
I came in 2016.
What for?
A
bit old for the nightlife.
Somewhere different from Brisbane.
Well, so when you had that breakup and you decided to move.
Yeah, it's a good
thing. Mm. And did you have a job to come to, or did you have to scrounge for one?
No, I scrounged for one. Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell us what it was, or you don't have to?
Yeah,
you can make it. You can make it general.
Yeah, I teach at a foundation program for international students.
Right
here in Melbourne.
Right. You teach.
Yeah. Teach English and science.
Excuse me, you teach science in the 21st century?
Yes.
Nobody believes in science anymore.
Okay. Well, some people do.
Really?
I try to change people's minds about it.
I mean, we've gone back to the 15th century and 16th, haven't we? You know, science, it's all myth, isn't it?
Well,
vaccination, a myth. You know, it's all myths. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, nature's knocking on the door, so nature would disagree with that, I think.
Well, nature doesn't care, does it?
No, that's
nature
right.
Nature doesn't care.
No.
It's like I say to people... You step on a snake, you'll get bitten.
Yes.
Nature doesn't care if there's not one human being on the planet, does it?
No.
It'd be actually relieved, I think. All right, so teaching. How difficult is that?
Much as you expect, it can be quite draining and time-consuming, but it's also rewarding.
So you're saying, did you say internet a foundation?
Yeah, so people studying to, students, international students who are studying to go into university.
Right. So is it, and how hard is it for them to grasp things?
They're bright students. They come in with a pretty decent level of English, so that it's just a year's work getting used to Australia and the education system here.
Right.
And preparing them to do well when they do get to university, and then generally they do.
So you're preparing people for the satanic meal, work. Is that what you're preparing them for, eh?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, the wage system.
Yes.
Yeah, the wage slavery.
And learning at university.
And learning. Yeah, but you don't do learning at university, do you?
Yeah, well, things happen while you're at university learning.
Chris, I was at university before you were born. Yes. Right? I started university in 1970.
Yeah.
And I graduated in 75, and I'm going to a 50th year reunion.
Wow.
In Queensland. I can't believe it, I'm going back. But that's a different story.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, when we went to university, you just wander in, you do an exam at the end of the year. If you passed your exam, you went to the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you got all this continuous assessment bullshit. There's no learning. It's all about route learning, isn't it? Come on. Is it about thinking going to university these days?
It's harder, I think, because of casualization of tutors, for example.
Yeah.
And, the commodification of education, for sure. Yeah. But, there are things, because of people being the age they are and being at university and meeting lots of different people and becoming politicized, there's a lot of good things that still happen, I think, around the edges of education.
Oh, right. So when did you first bump into the West Papuan office?
Pretty soon after I came to Melbourne, I was looking around for the Melanesian community, and West Papuan office popped up on my radar, and I started to come along to events.
What do you mean popped up on your radar? Are you one of these internet savvy people, one of these young people who knows all about the internet, Chris?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was on Facebook at that time.
On Facebook? Wow.
I was back in the day.
What, you've been banned, have
back
you?
In 2016 so I found out about. Probably through there somewhere.
Through there, right. So tell us your experience when you turned up to the office for the first time.
I think I was, I came along to one of the open day events.
Oh, right.
And
excellent.
Yeah, that's how it happened. And heard Jacob speak and was very impressed by Jacob. And from there got more and more involved.
Right. And we won't ask you how you got more and more involved, obviously. when you first came in,
yes.
Louise Byrne.
Yes.
Who's sitting in the background there on a yellow plastic chair where she deserves to be without a microphone, gives me this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 page history of the office. And I said to her, we don't need this shit. People know about the office.
Mm-hmm.
But do they know about the office, Chris? Am I wrong that nobody knows about the West Papuan office?
People would know, I think, from the open days that we exist and that we have events. We have events both at the office and also around Melbourne at various things. But I think that they wouldn't necessarily know all the things that the office does. It's a very important office globally.
So how is it important? See, this is what people don't understand.
Mm.
I mean, they say, oh, well, you're giving some money, you've got an office, and so what, in Collins Street.
Mm.
So how does the office fit into the overall struggle for West Papuan independence?
Well, it's the FRW, the ULMWP Provisional Government's...
Could you explain that in plain English, please?
Yes. So ULMWP Provisional Government is the United Liberation Movement for West Papua.
Right.
And that is the umbrella organisation that brought together all the different liberation groups under a provisional government. So that's been a slow process over many years that's happened. And the FRWP is one of those groups that's underneath that umbrella organisation, the Federal Republic of West Papua. And now this office, which was set up as the Foreign Affairs Office of the FRWP, is now under that ULMWP Provisional Government.
Right.
So Dr Jacob Rumbiak is the Foreign Minister of that Provisional Government.
Right. So what functions do you carry out?
Oh, so many.
Well, just give us a half a dozen.
First and foremost, we are the Foreign Affairs Office. So a lot of the work that Jacob and the Foreign Affairs team do is related to the Pacific and engaging with Pacific leaders. So we're a base for that. And as well as that, we do outreach and education. So through the open days that we do, but then also many events that we have throughout the year. To connecting with unions and churches, especially,
You say churches. Is there interest from churches in West Papua?
Yeah. From
churches, different churches, different denominations, or the specific denominations that are interested in what you're doing?
We have a lot of support from the Uniting Church here,
right,
and the Anglicans. The various church organisations in West Papua are very organised, and so they're on the ground. They play a big part in the struggle as well. And then some of the volunteers are connected to the churches as well. So that's the connection here.
Yeah, because religion is an integral part of most West Papuans' lives.
Isn't it? That's right. Yeah. Mm.
Look, on that segue. You thought I'd forgotten about you, didn't you? You thought I forgot about you, Gibson. No, I'm interested in exploring this because a lot of people, you know, think of guerrilla fighters as, you know, horrible atheists like me. Mm. Now, obviously, religion is very important in West Papua.
Yeah.
Is it important in your life?
Exactly.
Right.
So we say West Papua is the land of gospel.
The land of the gospel.
Yes. So either you like it or not, you have to, you know, like every West Papua, they have to come to church like that. So,
right.
But in West Papua, we have like lots of denominations as well.
Yep.
Like from me, some from Gidi. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, lots of denominations in West Papua.
Mm-hmm. What's happened to traditional kind of religions? Are they still important to people?
Yeah, traditional is like it's still important as well. So religion and traditional, where you sort of like balance them, so it's close together like that.
Close together.
Yeah.
So do you think there are similarities between traditional religious belief and it's mainly Christian beliefs? Do you think West Papuans, you know, kind of were attracted, say, to Christianity more than they're attracted to the Muslim religion?
Well, that's...
I know it's hard, yeah, and you're only a young man.
Yeah,
yeah, but, you know, you're bright. They tell me they tell me you're bright.
West Papua?
Yes.
I will say 99% is Christian. I mean, Christian.
That's of the traditional people.
Yeah.
The West Papuans.
Yeah.
Mm.
But what? Just 1% is like Muslim, so...
Yeah, but hasn't the transmigration program brought across a lot of Muslims now into West Papua, and they almost balance the number of Christians, or not?
Yeah, exactly. It's like give, you know, really massive impact to West Papua. So
yes.
Now, if you see the data, like the number of people that lives in West Papua, now it's like the immigration from Jaffa, from Jakarta people, like, yes, it's now more higher now than indigenous of West Papua.
Yeah, because they get free land.
Exactly.
They give away. So that's like we used to do in Australia.
Yeah.
We used to take away the land of the indigenous people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait, and give it to our friends. Do they do the same in West Papua, do they?
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, so they say, look, sorry, Gibson, you can't stay here. We've got some migrants coming from Java.
I would say that's the government.
The government. Yeah, it's not the migrants' fault.
If I'm
offered free land, why wouldn't? And I assume free seeds and, you know, and assistance and money and to come across.
So in West Papua, like for the land, the government will say this is the property of government. I mean, this land is owned by the government. So the indigenous people, they can't, you know, like, they can say, this is my land. So once their land, they will build some houses and everything.
Yeah.
And then they will bring immigration from Jaffa.
Yeah. Well, we were better than you. We said nobody lived in Australia, terra nullius, until 1992.
Right.
We said there was the land of no one. That was our legal foundation document. Do they recognise you as the original inhabitants?
They recognize us, but they don't really respect us, you know.
Right.
They just come and, like, steal it like that. Like, no one is stay here, you know.
Yeah. Like, well, you're only growing food on the land. We can grow palm oil. That's right. Now, we shouldn't laugh, but serious. I mean, this is what's happening.
Yeah, but
you're being pushed and pushed and pushed out of the more fertile parts of the country, and you've got these plantations and mining and deforestation and fisheries and gold. I mean, you could be heaven on earth, West Papua. You've got so much. But all these Indonesian generals, they want it too. And they got bigger guns.
We say West Papua is like heaven on earth, as you said.
It is, it is.
And, you know, we have lots of resources. Mm. But Jakarta, like the central government, they control it. So we are indigenous of West Papua, and we don't know our resources, where they take it, where they sell it, or what's the benefits that we got, like. Nothing.
Well, you want benefits. You don't own the land. It's theirs.
So, like, the government, like, you know, as the government, they're supposed to, like, you know, once they get the resources, they're supposed, like, you know, providing us, like, what we need about probably, like, a health system or education or everything.
Yes, nothing comes back.
And nothing comes back.
Now, I understand. I understand there is one Indonesian soldier in West Papua for every male West Papuan, over 250,000 Indonesian soldiers. Is that correct? That's what I've been told. It's just full of Indonesian soldiers. I'm just saying there's a lot of Indonesian soldiers in West Papua.
Yeah.
Lots.
Especially in my area in Highlands.
Yes, yes.
Highlands, like every young West Papuan, once they graduate from senior high school, and there will be some, you know, from the army or police, they will open for the indigenous of West Papua to apply to become a police or army. And then everyone, they will apply it.
Yes.
Once they apply it, there is no, you know, like any requirements. They will just go, you know, once they become a police, and then they start to, like, you know, the military, they start to send them to, like, in my hometown, Yaukimo, Bofendiguel, and they start to send it, and then start to fight them with the freedom fighters.
With the freedom fighters.
Yeah.
And I understand that every 10 or 15 kilometers, there's military checkpoints.
Exactly, yeah. So you will find lots of military posts everywhere.
Everywhere. So it's not as if I could come in on a tourist visa and just get on a motorbike and enjoy myself. I'd have to go through all these military checkpoints. And most likely,
if you visit our land and you try to take a picture or record a video, probably like Indonesian intelligence or someone, you know, they'll come and like say, why you take video? Why you take a picture? Stuff like.
I'd say I want to take a picture of a disappearing people. That'll be the end of that.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Look, it's 4:32. This is Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. I'm chatting to two people involved with the West Papuan office at 838 Collins Street. Now, on the 31st of August, we have the West Papuan Rent Collective, and the West Papuan office is having one of their regular shindings, which you all have an invitation to come to. Lunch from 1 till 2. Then you've got the book launch of The Stowaway from Sarong to Rotterdam, Eddie Kawara, and the author. If I put on my glasses, see, this is what will happen to you, Gibson. When you get old, you'll be like Daryl over there and Louise over there, and you'll need your glasses to read anything. So, you know how not to get old?
I don't know.
Die young. And we've got a guest speaker, the author, Andy van Binsbergen. I may actually ask Louise later on how she found this person. I don't understand how she finds all these fascinating people and then drags them to Australia. This is not on Zoom, is it, Chris?
The interview with her will be online, but not on Zoom.
Not on Zoom. You've learnt your lesson, haven't you, mate?
Yes.
There is one thing when you come to the West Papuan office is Zoom is, oh, my God. I have seen
so many. Come on, get on with it, Joe. Get on with it.
Just shut up, Joe. I've seen so many Zoom disasters. But it's the way of the world, isn't it, Chris?
Sometimes, yes.
It's an option.
Supporters are spread around the world, so.
That's right. So you need to see what the office is doing, obviously.
Yes.
So what do you got planned for the 31st? Well, not you personally, but I mean the office as a whole.
Well, we've got the book launch. We have updates about what we're doing and about West Papua. Mm. We have an auction which you run, raising money to support the work that we do. We usually have some music, so there'll be some music again this time. Mm. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity for everyone to get together and learn about what's happening on the ground in West Papua and catch up.
Yeah, you've got to remember, you come to 838 Collins Street and it's closed. You walk around the back, that's where the action is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the lunch is, that's where the book launch is, that's where everything is happening. And
but we the office is upstairs, but people are welcome to come and see it on the day or also during the week. So you can
message and make
an appointment.
Excuse me?
Yes.
You actually welcome guests into the office.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love to get
people in. You mean it's clean?
It's cleaned.
And you got coffee.
We have coffee, yes.
And tea. Yeah,
we have a coffee and tea. We have a library, an amazing library of West Papua, books about West Papua.
You're kidding.
No, not at all.
This is in the office.
Yes.
And you're welcome guests.
Yes.
well, how do people get a free cup of coffee then?
They can message us or...
Well, what are the what? Drums or smoke or signals? How do they message you?
Email. If you search for the West Papua Women's Office or the FRWP office, you'll find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on most of social media. You can also email us at FRWP Women's Office.
Slowly, Chris. We're not all as erudite as you are. We're just simple human beings trying to understand what's happening. So how do they email you?
FRWP,
yep.
Women's Office, all one word, @gmail.com.
And if they don't want to use the devil's instrument, the internet...
Yes.
Is there any other way they can contact you? Can they SMS something? Is there a phone number they can actually contact you on?
Yes, absolutely. 0424-745-155.
Ah, so that's 0424-745-155.
And that's right.
And some nice people will take them around.
Absolutely.
Do you welcome Indonesian spies?
We have had some Indonesian supporters.
Yeah, you have. Look, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Younger Indonesian Australians are often very supportive.
Very supportive, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it's fascinating, isn't it? I've just noticed that a number of Chinese nationals are now languishing in jail awaiting trial on foreign interference. And I spoke about this on one of my other programs a few weeks ago when all this shit hit the fan. But we constantly have... Indonesian consul, embassy officials and spies taking down information, gate crashing West Papuan events, and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens because they're our friends. Mm. Indonesia's our friends.
Mm.
It's just extraordinary. You've got all this new legislation, and under this new legislation, they should be charged as foreign interference.
Mm.
What is more... interfering than interfering with an exile community. It's just extraordinary. I can't believe it. I'll have to ask Louise about that later on.
Mm-hmm.
That means I'm going to have to talk to her, but that's all right. She's a very decent, hard-working human being.
She is.
Oh, thank you, Gibson. That's very kind of you. What, did she kind of... tell you to come up to Melbourne? Did you come down to Melbourne from Brisbane, did she? Did she recruit you, did she?
When I came down, I didn't know her.
You came down. Did you know about the West Papuan office when you came down to Melbourne?
Nah.
What do you mean you didn't know about the West Papuan office when you came down to Melbourne? Don't you use the devil's instrument, the internet?
So when I came down here, my uncle in respect, see, he's from Biak, Angel Alphonse.
Uh-huh.
And then he's the one that introduced me about what we are doing here.
Yeah.
But our office and our movement and everything.
Well, your uncle Alfred was the only West Papuan in Australia for many, many years, because he was a refugee in the 1980s, I think, or even the 1970s. He's an extraordinary human being. We hug each other when we see each other, you know. You know why? Because we've got the same lounge shirts. He gave me one once, and I've got to find it to wear it this, this next Sunday. No, he's a wonderful human being. His late wife was another wonderful human being. She died recently, and she was a great supporter. So there's. So when did you first come into the office? You don't have to tell us the exact day, but I would appreciate a year.
I would say last year.
Last year.
Last year. There was, I don't really know, because...
You know, how am I supposed to know if you don't know? I mean, you're the only one who knows that you came into the office. Did you come into the office because you wanted to punch up somebody, or you wanted some information, or you just wanted to meet some other West Papuans?
I would say on that day we have like an event. It's like, you know, like remembrance.
Remembrance, that's right. For those young men that had been tortured, I remember that they had been placed in the in a big can, and then they were cut and tortured and bled to death. That was only last year. People don't forget these atrocities are not just committed in Gaza; they're committed in West Papua constantly, day after day.
Yeah, West Papua is like every day.
You know, people get tortured, they get kidnapped, they disappear. You never see them again. It's just horrendous. But because you're our neighbours, we don't care. Because Indonesia's our friend, you know that. We don't care about you. Can I tell you a funny story? I always repeat this story. It's just, it shows you how difficult things are in this country as far as the West Papuan movement is concerned. A number of years ago, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, a West Papuan activist, she was an Australian woman, was killed in a bicycle accident in Darwin. And a senator wanted to do a condolence motion in the Senate for her work she'd done for the West Papuan Independence Movement and the work she'd done for the environmental movement. And both the Labor Party and the Liberal National Party joined forces to deny the condolence motion because the word West Papua was used in the condolence motion. That's how sensitive governments are to the question of West Papuan independence, because obviously... it's a decision which was made. Because you've got to remember that all those wonderful Indonesian troops out there, not the ordinary troops, but what's the special branch called? The special forces, what are they called?
Kopassus.
Kopassus, yeah. They're all trained here in Brisbane at Kanagra. Did you know that?
Really?
Yes.
What?
We're the ones who taught them counterinsurgency, how to deal with you mob. We're the ones who sell them the arms. They're trained at Kanagra.
We don't sell arms to other nations, Joe. That's incredible.
No, we do sell it to Indonesia. We don't sell them to Israel. Get it right.
Oh, sorry. I forgot about that one.
They're our friends.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Right?
But they're trained in Australia. They're trained in counterinsurgency. They're armed by the Australian government. And they've got full Australian government support, whether it's Labor or Liberal National, full support for many decades. Wow. Regarding what's happening. So that's how difficult the West Papuan struggle is. Nobody cared about East Timor because they haven't got anything. A bit of oil in the sea and a bit of coffee in the highlands. But you think, like you told me before, West Papua, biggest gold deposits in the world. Some of the rarest and most forested regions left in the world. More forested than the Amazon. Some of the best fisheries in the world that haven't been exploited.
Exactly.
And it just goes on and on. As you said, it's a heaven on earth.
Heaven on earth, exactly.
Except for people.
Except the people, It's suffering, still suffering.
Now, Louise, would you like to enter the conversation? Because I've got to ask you a question or two, because I've been so rude to the guests, not to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, you can't. We can't. You can shout, but you're not that good.
All right.
Chris can get up for a few minutes because I want to ask you a few questions.
Hard questions now, It's been pretty easy going. God, I've been going to sleep.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty boring. I know. That's why I need you.
Let's go. Move.
Comments.
All right. You've been in Sweden recently.
Oh yes, but let's not go there.
Excuse. Was this a secret visit that I've just?
My nephew was marrying into an Aramaic speaking family.
Aramaic.
Originally from Syria on the Turkish border.
There you are, Joe. Is. Now listen, boy. You listen. You told me Armenian. You didn't tell me Aramaic. Yeah. There's a huge difference. He said to me, "She's babbling about. There's only 10,500 Aramaic-speaking people."
It was a slip of the tongue. I mentioned it to her. It was a slip of the tongue. She meant to say Tamin, but in actual Armenia, it's around the world. But in actual Armenia, there's 2 million or something, you know, in the place of Armenia. I think.
Aramaic speaking.
Well, no, Armenian. No, this is different. I said Armenian.
This is a different group.
Yeah.
Aramaic. That's right.
That's different.
Yeah. So you get a bit muddled up. It's easy to because.
he got muddled. I never the get big muddled Joe up. Got muddled up.
Because everyone talks about the Armenian massacre in 2015.
Genocide. Yeah.
But in there were the Aramaics.
Yeah.
And the Aramaics are the real target because they're the thought for the Muslims, because that's the heart of the Jesus language. That's the language Jesus spoke to his mother Mary in Aramaic.
Boom.
And I said the Hail Mary at the wedding in Aramaic.
Did you?
And the Assyrian bishop of Antioch said, Louise, that was very, very good.
Could you repeat it for us, please, Louise?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she can.
Yeah, it's good.
Shalom lek Maryam. That's I can only remember the first line now. Shalom lech Marianne. That means Hail Mary.
Of course.
Oh, wow. I've probably got it in here.
That's all we need to know about Hail Mary.
Shalom lech Marianne.
Joe, you may be a cynical atheist, but I'm still looking for redemption. All right? I'm still looking for a religion to
you
follow.
Know,
I'm old.
Now, I'm full bottle and all this stuff. You know when Mary appears now? You know
no,
how
she's never appeared. She's never appeared to me. I don't take enough drugs for her to appear.
In France, isn't it?
Oh, all over the place.
That's right.
But she speaks to whoever she's appearing to in that language.
Aramaic.
And then when she in their language, like French, if she's a Fatima.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then when she prays, she still prays in Aramaic.
Does she?
Yes.
Well, I'll check that when I go to Sicily in a few weeks' time.
Yes, because she makes appearances in Italy. Okay.
Yep.
And she's always in Sicily.
Yeah, the Madonna.
The trouble is they're all heathens these days, aren't they, in Sicily? Consumer driven.
Relax.
No?
Yeah, no.
Like Australia, they're one
of us.
There's
still people on the land.
Yeah. Come on, let's move on.
All right. Did you meet Andy van Binsberg, Bergen?
Yeah.
Okay. So she co-wrote the book with Eddie Corowa.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a fabulous book. He escaped on a Dutch schooner in 1964. And peculiarly enough, the great heart of the book for me is he was a product of West Papua when it was a non-self-governing territory. No one talks about that. Long period, not long really, but 12 years formally as a UN territory.
Protectorate,
administered by the Dutch.
Yeah.
And so here comes this really smart little kid, two of them, 20-year-olds. And he was already under being hunted down by the Indonesians, even though he was a sailor and used to drive the pilot boats out and pull the big ones in and all that sort of stuff. And so he decided he had to escape, and everyone said, yes, you must escape now. How to? And on this boat comes this guy who was his pen pal in grade 3. Can you believe it? It's just like madness. So the two of them were under the oil tanker for 4 days to just get out of the harbour.
Yeah.
The Indonesians, someone spilled, and so the Indonesians came and gassed the ship and poured water down everywhere. They survived that. And then the Dutch captain wanted to throw them off. When they eventually staggered out, they were all covered. And then he got instructions from Holland, well, actually from his own men, who said they were going to mutiny if he threw the Papuans off. So it's people power. And that ship actually was manned, sailored, by criminals. They were given a choice of going to jail for whatever crime or going on this Dutch cargo ship, the MS Scheld. And so
no wonder the captain had so much trouble.
Yes. But they saved the boys.
Yeah, it's cheap labour. That's what it was.
Yes.
You don't have to pay them. They're just convicts.
Yeah.
So, no, but did you meet Andy van Binsberg?
Okay. Yes. Well, Jacob did, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. What, in Holland? In Sweden?
Yeah.
No, I met her in East Timor.
Ah, oh, good.
Years ago, when I went to get my Timorese medal.
All right.
2012.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Timorese medal. What Timorese medal?
For valor.
For valor. For valor. V-A-L-O-U-R.
I don't know what it means. Tell Gibson what valor means. He loves new words, especially Latin roots.
Bravery.
Okay, so...
misguided bravery.
Before I met Andy,
yeah.
Jacob met Andy in East Timor during the referendum.
Right.
So all this is just sort of coincidental stuff. She's Dutch. She's worked in Indonesia with women workers. She's worked in East Timor. She hasn't worked in West Papua, but she works with West Papuans in Holland.
Oh, right.
And she's this big, buxom Dutch activist.
Good. That's what you need. Is Jacob going to give us a kind of a short roundup of what's happening regarding the movement?
Oh, yes. On the 31st?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
What do you want to know in particular?
Nothing. I just want to know whether he's going to
Who's sleeping with President Prabowo?
Well, I assume...
our best friend.
There's a lineup, I assume.
What's the point
of being president if you can't sleep with people?
He's not really...
He's an old man. Leave him alone.
Yeah. No, they're very worried. The army is splitting a bit. Yes, because, well, as you know, half are Muslim and half are Christian.
Mm.
And so Indonesia supports Palestine people and they've had hospitals underground for years with Hamas and all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
So there's big problems in Indonesia over Gaza. And also West Papua's causing problems. Too many people now in Indonesia know that West Papua has to go. So that's causing
what do you mean has to go? Go where?
Well,
north, south, east, west? Are they going to put a tugboat and tow it away?
Yeah, no. Well.
What do you mean has to go?
Go independence?
Independence, yeah. There's autonomous. a lot of voices speaking up because they themselves are suffering under Prabowo. Aceh. Where else? Aceh.
Yeah. Maluku.
Kalimantan.
But didn't 70% of the population vote for him?
The alternative, that was a very hard vote because the two others were too closely aligned with the Muslim radicals in Indonesia.
Mm.
Muslim radicalism is a really big problem in Indonesia. So it was a hard choice. Do we go with the old military who have got a sort of, you know, that the devil we know kind of thing?
Mm.
Or do we go with these guys who are too close to the Muslim radicals because the Muslim radicals have got increasing amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of Indonesian people want a caliphate state.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck to them.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Louise. But Jacob is going to give us a roundup of what's going on as far as West Papua independence movement is concerned.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
That's right.
Could you just give us a rundown of what's happening on the day? You said that we're going to have some people singing.
Yes, the West Papuan Choir. The community choir,
yep.
They will sing, hopefully, turn up. Sometimes they turn up and sometimes they don't.
Well, they've got church service on Sunday.
Yeah, I know.
After church service.
But they'll
come
because this is their book. I mean, there's never been a memoir written.
Right.
Eddie Corwell wrote this and he's quite a unique guy for what he did. He went back to West Papua twice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so he knows what he's talking about in that book.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to the book launch.
Yes. Especially, Joe, what you'll love is chapter 4, where the cargo ship, you've no idea, comes down to Sydney, Melbourne, then it goes on. You've read it. Where does it go next? Goes back to Indonesia, goes to China, two places in China, Aceh, and every place the Indonesians sent people to try and get them off the boat, posing as journalists.
Yes, yep. Yes,
yeah. You love Eddie Corwin, don't you? Even though he's dead.
Excuse me.
He's really genius.
Did you say he's dead?
Eddie died in a month after the English translation was put up on the internet. Andy put it up.
Right. Yeah. He would have been a young man.
What?
How old was he?
This all happened in 1964.
Yeah, I was going to ask for a date. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Yeah. It's about time we got some reality in this.
Yeah, 1964.
64.
Yeah, so he was quite old.
Ah.
And he died a month after the English translation
came out.
Was put up.
Oh.
The Dutch one had already been put up.
So Sunday the 31st. Now, Chris, I know you're hiding there in the corner. I'll get you to take over from Louise. Otherwise, she'll be here till bloody 5 o'clock.
We've only got a few minutes.
Well, no. We got 6 minutes, okay? We've got 6 minutes. And, you know, I'm speaking to the...
Ask,
I'm not asking anything. Just go sit down in your seat. Sit down in your seat. Sit down in your seat.
He's the MC.
Sit down in your seat. I can't believe this.
I'll have to dump Joe in a second if he gets out of control.
Nine pages. Look at this. I'm just going to read out a few things for you, Chris, and you can comment on this.
Yes. I thought you don't like reading on radio.
I don't. That's the whole point. I'm being facetious. That's why I'm doing this. Because if it was up to Louise, we'd be reading all day. Look at this. 3rd of May, 2015. Speaker. Mr. Richard Muggleton, my scientific expedition to West Papua in 1971 and 73. August, 23rd of August, 2015. Speaker, Izzy Brown. 2013, Freedom Flotillas. Then we've even got a Lieutenant Colonel Lance Collins, retired, who I met. 13th September, 2015. Great power relationships and small nations. Mm. Have you got all this online?
A lot of it, yes, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Never listen. I mean,
no, excuse me. I'm speaking to Chris. I'm speaking to Chris. You've had your say, Louise. I've interviewed you on many occasions. I'm trying to show that The Office is not a one-horse show, okay? There are multiple people working in The Office. You're looking for volunteers to assist you. So what type of volunteers do you need, Chris?
We need people to help with our social media.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot of social media channels. We've got an online store. So we'd love to have people that are interested in helping out with posting things, searching for new merch, putting together.
You mean merchandise.
That's right.
Well, thank you.
We also are working on expanding our library. So when West Papua gets its independence, we'd like to contribute to the National Library through so we often hunt down secondhand books to purchase for that library. What else? There's a lot of kind of administrative things that happen in the back to do with accounting and the actual running of the office. So we have people that volunteer just with accounts once a year. So there's often people have expertise in a particular area and they might come to us and say, I'd like to volunteer, and we have a chat to them. And then we work out, you know, once a month you're going to come or to do something that they can do in a contained amount of time.
Right.
So we get a lot of help like that.
Now, obviously not everybody can come on the 31st of August, but there may be many listeners who and people listen to the podcast who may be interested. So you also have an online shop, do you?
Yes, we do. Yep.
So what does that sell?
It sells books, a lot of the books that the office has published. Multiple books, as well as we've got a lot of the books on West Papua.
Yeah,
we've got caps and pens and jewelry, traditional string bags, pins that people can
and all that t-shirts. Money. So you see, the Rent Collective raises money for the rent, only the rent.
Yes,
and obviously the office has to raise money to all the internal functioning of the organisation.
Yeah, but also to support the diplomacy and things like flights.
Flights.
For people to get to the Pacific, to lobby the governments of the Pacific.
Right. Mm. So it's a real independence kind of hub, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Every time I go in there, you know, I'm in there every week.
Yes.
There's always new people in there that I'm meeting and West Papuans that are visiting that I'm meeting.
Yeah, because, you know, offices don't exist for 11 years.
No.
Especially volunteer organisations. And if there's any listeners, I'd like to encourage them to become a member of the West Papuan Rent Collective. It's a very easy process. It's a dollar a day, which means 1 1/4 cup of coffees at your local cafe. Instead of going 5 days a week, you only go 4 days a week. That's $365. You can do it anonymously. You just put it in a Commonwealth Bank. We'll give you the details of the account. Nobody's going to bother you. It's an honour system. If you decide to donate the year after, that's fine. You can donate every week. But the important thing is that without the West Papuan Rent Collective, there would be no West Papuan office. It's that simple.
That's right.
Yeah, and people like Louise and Dr. Jacob Rumbiak and all the other marvellous people who over the years have been part and parcel of that exceptionally important hub for the West Papuan independence struggle. You wouldn't know about them and you wouldn't know about all the issues they've done. So, Christopher, Chris?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Lynch.
Thank you for your support of the office. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, well, it's the easiest thing I do. I mean, there's a lot of things you do in life and some you enjoy doing and others you do because you have to. And I can assure you that being part of that West Papuan office and the West Papuan independence struggle is one of the highlights of my life. And I'd also like to congratulate Joe and his family for being members of the West Papuan Rent Collective for many, many years.
Wow.
And Gibson, thank you very much. And you're going to be the master of ceremonies, Louise tells me.
I am.
Have you got all your pronunciations right? Because I never pronounce people's names right.
I'll practice.
You'll practice. Well, I'll be marking you.
Okay.
I'll be marking you, mate. You know, if you make more mistakes than me, you're fine. But the chances are you won't make more mistakes than I make. Thank you very much. Excuse me, Louise. He will make some. He's a man. All right. He's not like you. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Gibson.
Thank you.
Most of all, thank you, Louise, for bringing these fascinating guests into 3CR.
Pleasure. So just reminding you, you've been listening to Radical Australia, folks. You can listen back at 3cr.org.au/Radical Australia. And as Joe said earlier on, this will be podcast later on, very soon. So stay tuned for Brainwaves, and I'll just leave you with this little quick message.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.